All members vote who desire to vote.
Members, this budget is not our preference.
Share the pain.
We've got to stop the games.
No baloney.
Taxes, taxes, taxes.
The next step's the governor's.
Only the good Lord knows.
Mr. Secretary, call
the
roll.
And when you hear those sounds, you know what it means. It's time for our weekly Capitol chat. Plenty of news coming out of our state's capital this week to talk about. A new field poll was just released this morning. It takes a look at the three competing tax initiatives that you are probably going to have to vote on in November. And the legislature's Republicans seeing eye to eye with our governor. That's actually a great headline for Capitol Chat, so we'll talk about that. In our studio this morning, Ben Adler, the newly named Capitol Bureau Chief. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth.
And congratulations on the position.
Thank you very much.
Well, you know your way well through the halls and up the stairways and into the offices. So let's start out by talking this morning about the field poll. What did it tell us?
Field poll looked at the three most likely tax initiatives to qualify for the November ballot. We don't know if all three of them will be there. Who knows? We're going to see how that goes over the coming months. But it looked at the one proposed by Governor Jerry Brown. It looked at the one that calls itself the Millionaire's Tax from the California Federation of Teachers and other groups. And it looked at the initiative from wealthy civil rights activist Molly Munger. And so just to give you the quick results, the one with the highest rating so far is the Millionaire's Tax, 63% yes, 31% no. Governor Brown's initiative, 58% yes, 36% no. And Ms. Munger's tax initiative, 45% yes, 48% no.
That actually parallels the governor's own internal polling just in terms of the Millionaires initiative ranking on top, doesn't it?
Well, generally what polls seem to show is that the Millionaires and the governor's initiatives are neck and neck. Usually the Millionaires has a slight edge, and the Munger initiative does not poll as well. At least, you know, the governor's folks, of course, did release their internal polling this week to make a public point. If your internal polling doesn't make the point you want it to do, you're not going to release it to the public.
Exactly. Exactly.
So yes. Then the field poll, I don't think the governor's folks would say the field poll doesn't come as much of a surprise to them.
Let's, for the audience, review the quick little synopsis of what each of the initiatives is.
The governor's measure would raise the sales tax by half a cent and raise the income tax on individuals who make more than $250,000 a year or families earning more than $500,000 a year. And the money would go for education and, by doing so, free up the state's general fund a little bit to help lower the budget deficit. The millionaire's tax would raise the income tax on Californians making more than $1 million and raise it even more on incomes above $2 million. The money would go to schools, social services, public safety, and road maintenance. And Munger's tax initiative would raise the income tax on most Californians, but on a sliding scale, so the rich would get a higher increase than the middle class. And it would earmark most of the money for K-12 education and pay down some of the state's debt in the first few years. And so if we look at the three measures and how it all bodes for the November ballot, there's a couple questions to ask. And then one is, if more than one tax measure is on the ballot, what are the chances? Do they remain the same or do they change? And that is a hot debate right now. The governor's team says if there's more than one, it's going to be really bad. They're all going to go down. And the backers of the other initiative say, various things. For example, they'll say that their measure is the best.
Of course.
And yet they will also say that in the past there have been examples that have shown that sometimes competing measures can pass. Then the other question to look at is, well, tax initiative starting out, at least the governor's and the millionaire's one, with broad, at least above majority support. And so can a tax measure actually pass? The last eight statewide tax measures in California, as Republicans like to say, have failed.
Have not.
So field poll director Mark DiCamillo spoke about that yesterday.
Sometimes initiatives hold to their initial level of support. Others, oftentimes in the face of big spending, can get beat down. So I think the unknown here, the big element that we can't factor in until it occurs, is what would be the magnitude of the opposition campaigns running against each of these initiatives, and what is the magnitude of the proponents spending and advertising as well.
Well, the magnitude of the opposition, it's interesting, and I think there are some other dynamics at work here, Ben. We've got the Senate President Pro Tem, Daryl Steinberg, saying, our governor has a plan out here. Shouldn't we stand by our governor? He's our leader. Tie goes to the governor. Right. And then you've also got that idea of the millionaires tax initiative just being labeled millionaires. And that resonates with people who might not know details about the initiative, but decide, yeah, I do want to take that position in raising taxes. I want to tax millionaires more.
Mm-hmm.
And it might gain public support just by the name of it.
The point that the governor's supporters and Senator Steinberg also makes is, yes, the millionaire's tax tends to pull better at first, but they believe it will attract more of a funded opposition, to Mark DiCamillo's point just a moment ago, than the governor's tax initiative will.
I want to move on to something else here, because we're mentioning the governor. He is in Washington, D.C. this week. He's at the winter meeting of the National Governors Association, which is unusual for him. It's not usually on his schedule. But I'm going to start you off with a quote from yesterday. I just love to grab on to the things he says because they're just so to the point. And so he was coming out of the Marriott Hotel Thursday afternoon, and a reporter talked to him about the dinners that he was attending. And he said, "I'm going to stop anyone who looks like they have money and ask them to contribute, because we need money in our state."
Yeah.
And he is there for fundraising.
That is one of the many things he is there for, to tap some money, some fundraising for his tax initiative, to gather signatures, because that costs a couple million dollars. And then, of course, there's TV ads and campaign materials for the measure as well. But he's also meeting with President Obama. He did so this morning, met with other Democratic governors, the president, and senior administration officials. He's having lunch with China's ambassador to the U.S. He's meeting with U.S. State Department officials later today, and other National Governors Association meetings. He'll meet later on in the week with Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. And I'm sure at that point some of the state budget issues are going to come up as well. So, and he's on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday morning.
He has a full plate. This is our Friday Capital Chat. Our bureau chief, Ben Adler, is in our studio with us this morning. We're talking about a variety of busyness that's happening with the Capitol, and an interesting stamp of approval happened this week. Although it's not final, it was a arm-in-arm lockstep on pension reform. Will you talk about that a bit?
Sure. And by arm-in-arm lockstep, that would be the Republicans introducing Governor Jerry Brown's pension proposal word for word without changing a single letter, as the Senate Minority Leader Bob Huff said.
Wow.
I don't know if, you know, let's put it this way. Senator Steinberg yesterday, the Democratic leader, said he told Bob Huff, the minority leader, that was a clever move, in that the general consensus on the conventional wisdom here is it seeks to put pressure on Democrats. To
mm-hmm.
back the governor's pension plan. But the governor, of course, was very mute, shall we say, or the governor's office was, on the Republicans doing that, because the move is being seen by the plan's critics as political. Even Democrats inside the building see it as political, but Republicans would say, look, we support the governor's measure. We think what he's doing here is right, and we're going to get on board. Let's listen to what Republican Assemblyman Cameron Smyth said.
These are all very common sense measures that we feel that Republicans and Democrats alike should easily embrace. And by moving forward together, we can restore some of the faith of the people of California in their legislature, that we understand that we're all in this together, Republicans and Democrats, the administration, the legislative branch, and that if we don't work together, we will all suffer as a whole. And so it's, you know, the governor has stepped forward, we as the Republican caucus has stepped forward, and now we expect the same from our Democrat colleagues.
Talk about politics. We're going to see a lot as this one moves. What's next? Is there a hearing coming up next week?
The Pension Conference Committee in the legislature, with some assembly members and state senators, does meet next week to look at increasing the retirement age. You know, Republicans are saying that Democrats are just talking this issue to death and pushing it off the radar when, you know, in their mind, we know what needs to be done now and not waste any more time. Democrats say we're going to set the emotion and the heated rhetoric aside, and we're going to study pretty deeply the nuts and bolts of pensions and craft a solution that addresses the governor's concerns, maybe not exactly the way the governor wants would propose.
Yeah, his initiative was just pulled back off the ballot just 2 weeks ago. So obviously there was some fast pressure to make a move. And
well, there was an outside group that was proposing a pension overhaul that went further than what the governor proposed, and that was what was pulled off the ballot a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Not the governor's.
Not the governor's. Okay. Speaking of the Republicans, between the hearing next week and right now, we've got a convention.
Yeah. The Republican State Party has its convention in the Bay Area this weekend in Burlingame, just south of San Francisco. And there's, of course, a lot of inside baseball issues there about, you know, how they're going to turn out the vote and candidates and who they're going to endorse and so on and so forth. But I think for most folks who maybe aren't interested in the nuts and bolts and inside baseball of the internal party machine or the machinations, rather, they're interested in the presidential primary. And Newt Gingrich is going to speak in person. Mitt Romney is sending one of his supporters, former governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty. I don't believe Rick Santorum has anyone is speaking. I know Santorum and Ron Paul are not going, and if they have big surrogates going, I haven't seen that yet. But I asked about half an hour ago, I was on the phone with the state party chair, Tom Del Beccaro, and I asked him about a recent field poll earlier this week showing Mitt Romney with a slight lead over Rick Santorum. And I asked him if that was a fair characterization of where he thought the race is right now.
The emphasis right now, I think that it's a fluid race. I think Super Tuesday is going to decide a lot. If it's a mixed decision or a split decision, then I think California becomes very relevant, and I think we'll be involved in the decision as to who the presidential nominee is going to be.
And I should have clarified that the poll I was referring to with Romney up on Santorum by a few points was a poll of California voters, not a nationwide poll.
Okay, well, this is a busy time for you, and because we're congratulating you on the new position, it's a moment to ask, what is a day in your life like as the Capitol Bureau Chief? It's the perfect time to ask that question.
It can be pretty hectic sometimes. It really depends on the time of year. When budget talks are going down to the wire, you're sometimes staking out the governor and some lawmakers. When there are late night sessions to get laws through, so you're at the Capitol pretty late. But perhaps a good typical example of what my day is like was my day yesterday, where I went to different events at 10 and 11 o'clock, came back, wrote some stories up, and kind of bounced back and forth, was running around a lot at the first part of the day. And sometimes you're halfway through a story and you have to set it all aside because something else breaks and you got to get on that. But, Capitol Public Radio being the only radio station in the state with two full-time reporters covering the Capitol, I do have help. And not to segue into the fun drive, but I'm going to anyway. It's only possible because of you, our listeners. So just want to say thank you very much for that, because our statewide coverage is not just surviving, but thriving at a time when the press corps at the Capitol gets smaller and smaller, seemingly by the day.
Well, your work, your content, your discussion, the thought-provoking questions are enjoyed and appreciated by all the listeners. So thanks for the pitch. And you're going to do a pitch later on today as well. So I know you're spending part of your day here with us.
No, thank you, Beth. Appreciate it.
All right, Ben. Ben Adler, our Capitol Bureau Chief, thanks so much for joining us. You won't really have a weekend with all that's going on, but we will talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
You are listening to Insight from Capitol Public Radio.